Okay, we're gonna get started. We are, mic's on. Hey, so good afternoon, everybody. Hope everyone's had a great week so far and really enjoying Tech Ed. My name's Mark Skurrell. I'm a program manager at Microsoft in the working on the Azure Compute and the Azure Compute group over in Redmond. And I wanna start off by, see if you can do this, go back a few days to the keynote and where both Jason Zander and Mark Vucinovich were talking about Azure Hyperscale. I think sort of one of the key things that stands out to me was, I think it was Jason was saying how Azure now is in 19 regions around the world. And in each of those 19 regions, it's capable of hosting hundreds and thousands of servers. So I sort of think it's sort of truly mind-boggling how much scale there is now in the public cloud and Azure has, and how that's now basically at our fingertips. So what I want to cover in the session today is we're going to spend some time having a look at the workloads that are going to leverage all that capacity, and then have a look at some of the capabilities that we're providing to help you and your customers, you know, realize some of that value and leverage, you know, all that compute power. Now, one of those capabilities that I'm going to discuss is Azure Batch, and that was just announced this week. It was in the keynote. Jason announced it, and Mark showed a Blender demo using Azure Batch. So I'm sort of really excited. We're going to spend some time covering, a significant amount of time covering Azure Batch today, and excited to do that because it's the first time we've been able to talk about it and show it in public. So I've got my fingers crossed. I hope you like it. So let's just start off, step back a little, bandy around terms. We have terms like big compute and HPC. So I think it's worth looking at, certainly when we talk about these things, what are those workloads? What are the big compute applications, the HPC applications, that are going to leverage all this capacity? And then what are the characteristics of those workloads? So I've listed a number of scenarios here I think are pretty representative. And the first group, really, I think, falls into sort of the category of file processing. You know, so we've got media transcoding, for example, being able to encode or transcode audio or video, for example, take it maybe from one source format, a master format, convert it to multiple resolutions, and convert it to different formats. You know, processing that input file and producing probably multiple outputs. Rendering, another great example we actually saw in the keynote with the Blender demo. There, Mark Vucinovich rendered a high-quality frame by splitting it up into lots of individual tiles and executing those in parallel in the cloud. Now, obviously, you could take a whole movie as well and split it up, whole movie, 24, 30 frames per second, split that movie up into a whole bunch of tasks, each of those tasks running and rendering the frame, and then even as Mark did, even split each frame up into multiple tiles. And then just general image analysis, image processing, you know, facial recognition, for example, could fall in that category. So the next set would be actually in the engineering space, you know, dev space. So sort of often what happens today, and certainly if you've got a big team and you're moving fast, you know, you want your developers to be writing the code, making fixes, adding features, and then, you know, submitting a build. Does it build? And then maybe running a test suite. So here you've got a lot of compute that you're going to need. You need to run those builds, and maybe you've got lots of developers running hundreds of builds. You know, you need to provide that quick turnaround because then they want to test them. And then you're going to need the quick turnaround on the testing. You need that compute power to actually run those test suites so your developers get those results back as quick as possible. So I think the engineering scenarios software development scenarios are really interesting. And then we've got maybe what you would term more of the traditional HPC applications and scenarios. So we've got fluid dynamics, maybe airflow over a car, or water flowing through pipes or through valves, that sort of thing. Monte Carlo simulations, certainly widely used, and we're gonna talk about Monte Carlo simulations a little later in the financial space, you know, using them to calculate risk. And then stress analysis, you know, the ability to maybe model cars crashing into other cars or structures or bridges and so on there. So hopefully, I think these are pretty representative scenarios, but they all have same sort of pattern and characteristics, and that all starts with the application or applications. So that could be the transcoding application, the rendering application, the stress analysis application. But then you're going to have many, many tasks. We talked about splitting the movie up. You know, maybe there's one task per frame, or per frame, then there's 30, 40, 40 tasks. You normally have a whole bunch of tasks which are going to execute or run that application and run it many, many, many times. But obviously, to do anything of interest, you probably need some compute power. Just knowing you want to do that isn't going to get you very far. So that could be your on-premises servers, traditionally, or the VMs up in Azure. And the first thing you're going to want to do is get those applications, or the application and any dependent files that they have, onto those VMs so they're ready to go and ready to run those tasks. And then you need a way to get those tasks, calling that executable, for example, you know, with the appropriate parameters to process that frame. Now, most of the time, I would say probably the majority of the scenarios certainly listed on the left-hand side there, these tasks are sort of completely in parallel. They're totally independent of one another. And that has some huge advantages in terms of sort of the scale at which you want to run. Because pretty much you're only really limited by the number of tasks. And at the very extreme, you know, you could have as many VMs to process as many number of tasks as you want, because they're all completely independent. But there definitely are some workloads there, and I'd say it's maybe the stress analysis is a good example, where sometimes these tasks actually need to communicate, and they need to pass data between them and collaborate on solving the problem or, you know, running the simulation. So in that case, there's really a requirement for those things to scale. You really need some ultra good high bandwidth to pass data between those nodes, and you need the ultra low latency. Because if you don't and you've got high latency, then your application just isn't going to scale. It's just going to get bogged down. So then a key thing I just really wanted to highlight was sort of the characteristic of these tasks compared to other tasks that are run in the cloud. You know, so if you think about, SQL Server or SharePoint running in virtual machines, you know, these workloads, these applications, they're running 24/7, very little variation, but they're pretty much permanently running and therefore have certain requirements to be able to do that. But in our case here, for big compute, we've got all these tasks, we've got lots of them running in parallel, but each individual task, it's very sort of finite. It's got a start, we're going to take some, probably an input file or input files, we're going to process it, do all that computationally intensive work, maybe render that frame, and then we're going to produce some output. So it's got a finite length. We're going to run an application for a certain amount of time, and we can see sometimes that could be a few seconds, you know, all the way up to we're currently running some tasks that maybe take 10 or 12 hours even. So it could be a huge variety, but they're not permanently running 24/7. And I think that's important when it comes to looking at what we need to provide to cater for those workloads. So I want to have a look then at, you know, why is Azure such a great place and the cloud such a great place to run these workloads? And this is sort of why I get excited about the big compute space, is actually running these applications in the cloud and the value that you and your customers can realize. So I think, you know, we're dealing with big compute, probably dealing with, you know, maybe certainly high tens, maybe hundreds of servers, for example. And this sort of cloud value propositions of being able to have those managed, so maybe you don't have to buy these servers, you don't have to get them installed, deployed, you don't have to manage them and patch them, and so on. Big value by having these hundreds of servers, of equivalent of them, up in Azure, and being able to run at that scale. But I think it's sort of the bottom two are sort of the really sort of killer value propositions. and sort of around elasticity and pay for use. So sort of traditionally, if you're running big compute on premises, you know, you're going to buy a bunch of servers, and you maybe buy a bunch of servers for the year, depending on a particular budget. And my guess is, in the majority of the cases, those servers are either underutilized, and you're going, man, I bought all these servers, and they're sitting there just generating a bunch of heat, or it's a peak time, and you haven't got enough, and then you have to work out, well, who to kick off, because I've got too much to do on these servers. Well, a lot of those constraints now effectively go away with the cloud. You can really leverage this hyperscale that we sort of talked about and talked about in the keynote. So, and with the elasticity, we're not even really just talking about, again, maybe some of these other workloads you might, for a website, may vary by a few cores or a few tens of cores on a daily basis according to the load. But with big compute, we're often talking about hundreds of servers, hundreds of cores. So if you've got a workload that varies throughout the day, you know, you could be talking of a delta from the peak to the trough or the bottom of your load, the lowest load, of a few hundred cores. And you really just want to be paying for that compute and not paying just for the maximum capacity to cater for that peak. And then really what we're actually seeing is we see extreme cases of this. So we have a number of customers in the big compute space that literally run at zero cores for a number of hours in the day, go up to, say, 5,000 cores, run a whole bunch of work for several hours, and then shut down to zero. So it's just a fantastic advantage and value for those customers because they can spin up a huge amount of capacity and only pay for it when they need it, and then when they don't need it and they're finished for the day, they can shut it down and stop paying for it. A huge value there. And I think there's some new possibilities as well, and I want to highlight a couple here, actually, both ends of the spectrum. So I think there's sort of customers out there, sort of like the small rendering is an example, small rendering consultancy, you know, two or three people working on rendering, maybe using the Blender application. And to date, they've sort of been limited by the compute power probably of their workstation. And then, as we saw in the keynote, they can now use the power of the cloud, get pretty much as much capacity as they want, and really do take on much bigger projects and sort of really compete with the bigger companies because they don't have to deploy that on-premises infrastructure and would have no interest in doing so and no resources to do that and manage it. So I think there's huge opportunity there for sort of these smaller scale customers who can really then take on work to rival some of these, you know, big organizations. And then maybe it'd be worth asking yourself, you know, if you or your customers, what would you do if you had 100,000 cores, 200,000 cores? You know, you can really leverage, you know, effectively these millions of cores that we have and probably do things that you or your customers never, ever could do with the on-premises infrastructure. So sort of maybe something to think about is, you know, really leverage that hyperscale that we've talked about. So in the keynote, we also highlighted Towers Watson. Towers Watson's customers really need to leverage big compute to execute financial and insurance models. And it's been our pleasure to work with Towers Watson over the last few months to integrate Azure Batch. You know, they've been an early adopter, integrate Azure Batch with one of their applications, Risk Agility FM. So I'm going to invite Cameron Murray from Towers Watson up to tell us a little bit about how they've integrated Azure Batch and the value that brings to their customers. So come on up, Cameron.
Thank you, Mark.
Here you go. I'll give you that.
Thank you. So, Towers Watson, who are these guys? Well, we're a leading provider of professional services in the finance industry. Billion-dollar company, 15,000 employees, and Risk Agility FM is our next generation life insurance modeling platform. We've been working with these guys for the past 5 years actually on high performance computing, and as Mark said, the last few months on Azure Batch. So I'm going to flip forward, actually. I've got some slides here. I'm going to get straight past this and come up to this bit here. Risk Agility FM, what is it? designed for actuaries to develop and run models to manage risk and safeguard solvency with a primary focus on the life insurance industry. What does that mean? Who cares? It means large-scale compute is required. Go back over here. So this is our big compute evolution. We go back 8 or so years with big compute. Who knows about HPC, Microsoft HPC? One guy, two guys, all of my teammates over here. HPC, Microsoft HPC, is a Microsoft HPC, Microsoft offering that allows you grid computing. Goes back to about 2008. What it offers you is the ability to run at scale on-premise. Oh no, but you've got to pay for all that. It's all on-premise. Smaller customers don't like to have those type of resources sitting idle. So then along came HPC Pack Hybrid. They offered Burst to Azure, PaaS. You can run on-premise, cloud, or both. Reduced infrastructure. However, you still had to start and stop the nodes. You still needed a head node on-premise, so you still needed hardware. Then you could do HPC Pack IaaS. That's fine. You've got everything up in the cloud, although you've still got a bit of a management overhead. You've got to remember to start the nodes, stop them. It had some sort of rudimentary scheduling ability, but most of the time, you don't use that. Now, Azure Batch, PaaS, all cloud, easy to use. Now, we've had a long history in HPC, and I can tell you, moving to Azure Batch, what a breath of fresh air. No infrastructure on-premise. Everything's in the cloud. The auto-scalability, it automatically scales up, scales down. Mark's going to be talking about it, obviously, but there's an auto-scale formula you can define. It's very flexible. How you want your nodes to start and stop. Do you want to spend money? Do you want to have your resources available all the time? There's all batch usage. Large-scale deployments without infrastructure. Saving money. Smaller organizations don't need corporate IT people. Auto-scale to meet demand. Reduce costs and administration. Again, auto-scale. Opens up grid computing to smaller clients. They don't need the infrastructure. We keep coming back to that. Lightweight REST interface. Now, when I started a year ago, that REST interface was all that was available. But now we've got a wrapper API. Makes life so easy. And there's a whole pile of samples that come with the SDK. It's an absolute piece of cake. Demonstration time. How do I do this?
This is where you've got to remember which button.
Forgotten how to do this. I think I've got to do... That's it. Got it.
What's that?
And I go back to there.
Yeah. Let's have a look.
How am I up? No, I'm not there.
There we go. Yep.
I'm there now. Okay. So I've got a remote desktop to an Azure VM here. And before I launch into the demo, there's a couple of monitoring tools you might be interested in. This is an application that we wrote ourselves, and this is an application here called the Batch Monitor Explorer that comes with the SDK. So this is a heat map, and this is a bit of a graph history of what's going on. So you can see here we've got A9 boxes. We've got 63 of them, 1,008 cores in total. I'll fire up our application, Risk Agility FM. So I'm going to throw it out to you guys. I've got two demos for you. You can either have one that produces numbers or one that produces pretty pictures. Who wants the numbers? This guy wants the numbers. Who wants the pretty pictures? Right, okay, pretty pictures it is. So.
Did you pay them to say
that? Yeah, that's right. So I'll open up this model here. So Risk Agility FM is a financial modeling software. So what that means is that clients write code. It looks like you're opening up Visual Studio. That is because this is built on the Visual Studio isolated shell. So here's a bit of code that's going to generate my Mandelbrot set. I'm going to come over here. We're going to have 1,500 tasks. That's 1,500 images. And we're going to submit this job off to the grid. I'm going to submit. So this big compute thing that you can see here, oh, by the way, so our application can support standalone, this is the evolution, right? HPC, HPC Burst, Azure Batch.
So the standalone, that's just the workstation?
That's just the workstation. That's the equivalent of Jason, who was it? Mark, doing the Blender standalone.
Right. So we're going to probably don't want to select that one.
No, I will not select that one. So we're going to go to this big compute. Now that's a pool that I've created in Azure Batch, and that's the one with the 1008 cores. So I will submit that, and I'll open up these little tools so you can see what's going on. And hopefully, cross fingers, this will light up.
So what's happening here, Cameron?
What's happening here is that REFM is submitting the jobs to the grid. Up here, you can see queued tasks, running tasks. We should have 1008 running. That's good. We can see the heat maps lit up. Every core is busy. And then shortly, within a few seconds, we should start getting some progress. Now, down here, this is the REFM progress bar, waiting patiently. So this is all running in Azure. This has got some input data that needs to be sent up. It's all in blob storage. Needs to come back again. So this is the full round trip.
So literally there, you submitted 1,500 tasks, had a job, 1,500 tasks, and then it probably took a second or so for these 1,000 cores to light up and be processing.
Well, that's the thing I should mention. Back in the HPC days, that's backed by SQL Server, so it had limitations on how much tasks you could put in at the throughput and all that sort of stuff. Azure Batch is backed by table storage. You can fire as many tasks at it as you like. It's absolutely lightning fast. So these are all coming back now. As you can see, the progress down here in REFM is moving. Now that's all downloading the blobs from storage. So what I'll do, just to give you the full experience, is I'll minimize this. You've seen enough of this. Well, actually, we'll wait for this to finish.
Okay, so these are A9s. I think we can point out they're A9s. They're a sort of high-performance VM. They've got 16 cores. And what we've done here, you've got a, you're really maxing these out, and you've set max tasks to 16 here. So there's 16 individual tasks being scheduled and running in parallel at once on one of these boxes.
Yeah. So this particular model. Now, I'll say that the model, even though it produces fancy graphics, is very indicative of the type of models that our clients use. It's an iterative model. So our clients need big compute. So the A9s and the scalability is going to come in very handy. Yeah. All right. So that's all done. That's all looking good. So let's start my little application slideshow. These are the images that got it produced.
Very good. And that was about, each task would take about, it's about 5 seconds, 6 seconds, something like that.
Each task took, if I just move this out of the way, well, that one took 39 seconds, but the problem, 23 seconds. So obviously, it's a Mandelbrot set, so it depends on the complexity of of the calculations.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so these type of things, processing locally, you can forget about it. Now, I'm willing to sell some of these for a price later on if you want to take a frame one of these home with you.
That's right. The vendor at the back.
Okay, now I need to get out of this. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Great. Hey, thanks, Cameron.
Thank you. All right, you okay to switch back?
Yep, I've got to work this out. So for all this compute, by the way, I'll be sending you the bill tomorrow for those A9s. All right, let's go back. Has that done it? Have we got the clicker? There we go. Great. So I think, you know, there we can basically see huge amount of compute, huge number of tasks, very computationally intensive work. And I sort of think one of the sort of key messages there from the technology standpoint was how over 1,000 cores got lit up and were running, doing useful work in literally a second. And then from the Towers Watson customers, how they can leverage that. It's all cloud-based, no on-premises infrastructure. So let's have a look at the capabilities in a little bit more depth and what we provide to really enable you and your customers to use big compute in Azure. And what I want to do is sort of look really up and down the stack, and actually going to start at the bottom of the stack, because if we sort of don't have the right capabilities at each level of the stack, we can sort of limit our offering. It's sort of really important that we think about it from the bottom all the way up the Azure stack. And I want to start off with the hardware there. So with the hardware, you know, we offer a wide variety of hardware, from the commodity hardware, the basic VMs, the A-series and so on, all the way up to the ultra-high performance hardware, the A8s and the A9s that Cameron showed there. And then actually earlier on this week, we announced the G-series, you know, massive number of cores, massive amount of memory, latest Intel CPU. So in a lot of cases, you know, you really want to scale out, get the most cost-effective compute that you can, and the commodity hardware is going to work great. But depending on the application, maybe you've got your end users, maybe it's those developers or your customers coming in, they're submitting their jobs, they want that finish as quickly as possible, then you can use the ultra-high performance hardware that we have. So on the VM size as well, we were using 16-core VMs there, but you've got a choice for anything from partial cores all the way up to, with the G-series, it's 32 cores. So again, depending on your application, is it a single-threaded app, maybe low memory? Is it a highly threaded app, needs a lot of memory? You know, we provide you that choice on the VM size to support, you know, whatever application that you want. And then a couple of slides back, I talked about those tightly coupled tasks that need that high bandwidth network with ultra low latency. And so on our A8 and A9 VMs, we have basically, it's a unique offering in the public cloud of the RDMA network. And we're basically achieving the performance there on that network that's as good as on-premises RDMA network. It's really, we're really, really happy with that. So then there's the VMs. And we offer, you know, obviously a choice of IaaS and PaaS, a different way to consume those VMs, and standard images or custom images. You know, take our images, standard images, install your applications on them, or, you know, create custom images and, you know, already install your applications and so on there. And then Windows and Linux. You know, we're quite happy to support a whole bunch of big compute on Linux as well as a whole bunch of big compute on Windows. So I think, you know, you can see it's, you know, we offer you a lot of choice and a lot of choice to cater for, you know, whatever application that you want to run in this core, you know, compute stack. So we've got a great foundation here, I think, for big compute. So then you want to run your, develop your application maybe or develop your service. What are you going to have to do? You know, what would Cameron have to do if he hadn't used Batch? Well, it turns out there's a whole lot of infrastructure that you would have to develop. And customers have had to develop this so far. We've worked with a number of customers who have said, oh, man, I wish I had that Azure Batch service. This is actually going and getting the VMs, installing the applications, getting those tasks running on each of those VMs, and so on and so on. A whole bunch of work. And we really sort of consider this infrastructure, and we should provide that, and you should be able to focus on your application and your core business. So what do we provide to avoid having to develop all that functionality? And Cameron talked about HPC Pack, and sort of been around for quite a while now, and really our solution for managing, you know, large-scale on-premises clusters and job scheduling to those clusters. We talked about, you know, having burst capability. So HPC Pack supports burst, so you can supplement those on-premises clusters with effectively nodes and clusters up in Azure. So if you take on more workloads or you've got peaks at certain points in the month, you can use Azure for those peaks. And then effectively take everything, you know, effectively remove the need for your on-premises infrastructure and servers, take that already working deployment and lift it and put it up in the cloud using the virtual machines offering. So sort of great capability and a great way for people with current existing big compute and HPC pack to transition to the cloud. So let's have a look at Azure Batch. So Azure Batch, we're sort of targeting two main scenarios and actually going to demo both of these today. So the first one is you're building a service. Maybe if we take an example, worked with a customer who's building effectively a site for photo enthusiasts. So you've got lots of photos from, you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of users being uploaded, maybe videos as well. When they get uploaded, you want to maybe resize those pictures. You want to extract EXIF information from those photos. You maybe want to run facial recognition on those photos. A lot of computationally intensive work that you've got to do as part of your service. Instead of developing all that infrastructure in the middle there, we can use Azure Batch. And really sort of provides that, for this scenario, that foundational capability of that batch processing, that job scheduling, and so on, and avoiding you to build the infrastructure. So as the caller, I think there's sort of really sort of two main parts to it. If you're using Azure Batch, you will first of all want to be able to specify the VMs and configure those VMs, get those VMs ready to execute the work and run these applications. And then you want to basically provide the task, specify the task, the command lines, the parameters for those command lines to run on those VMs. We actually also optionally have a schedule as well. So if you have recurring work every hour, every day, and so on, we actually support that as well. So behind the scenes, basically what we do is a whole bunch of those boxes. You know, we can go and get those VMs, make sure they stay healthy. We provide a bunch of capabilities to allow you to get the applications from storage onto the VMs, get the data that you need to process, like the input for your rendering the frame, from storage onto the VM, really help you with that, minimize the amount of code that you have to write, and then do all the queuing and allocation of those tasks to the VMs. And there's a lot of complex things that when you start into this, complex cases you have to handle around error handling, and maybe your task could freeze, or maybe there's a transient failure and you want to retry them. Azure Batch handles all of this stuff. So we're going to do a demo and let's try and build a service, or I'll show you a service I've done that uses Azure Batch. So this is where I pick this machine. Let's see if that turns. There we go. Perfect. So I'm actually going to start off. It seems a little strange, but I'm actually going to start off in storage. And I've got a storage account here. And this sort of helps show you what we're going to do, what the service is going to do. So I hope you can see that. I've got zoom it here. So we've got three containers in a storage account, input, output, and resource. And in the first container here, if we go into input, we can see we've got a bunch of PDFs. Now, let me actually pick. I'm going to pick one here, this guy, and open it. So what our service is going to do is we're going to perform some OCR, optical character recognition. And we've got basically a bunch of PDF scans of documents here. And fingers crossed, we're going to process all of these and come up with text, do the OCR on them, and get some text files at the end. And the OCR being pretty computationally intensive application. So we can see one of these scanned PDFs here. We go in, you can definitely see it's scanned. So we've got that. Let's go back up here and have a look at the output. Did I have it? And I did. Cleared that. So we haven't got any output. So the text files are going to end up here in this container. And very important, we've got a resource container here. So we talked about the application. And what application am I going to run here? So we've got a container here which has the applications I'm going to run and all the dependent files that they have. And the main thing, if we're going to do OCR, is the OCR app, and we're going to use Tesseract here. So this is effectively an off-the-shelf, it's an open-source, freely available OCR application and algorithm. So we've just got the Windows install for that. This will run on any Windows desktop, Windows server, and so on. And we're going to run that at scale. There's actually a couple of other applications as part of the pipeline, if you like, part of our task. So actually what you'll see in the command line is we're actually going to run PowerShell. So with Azure Batch, our interface is as complex as give us a command line. And that command line could be a CMD, could be a batch, PowerShell, or the XE. So we've got our resources here. So let's go and then have a look at our service. Bring up Visual Studio, OCR demo. And I'm going to run that. So this is a web role. I'm just going to run it locally in the Dev Fabric here. And I've just developed this. I took the .NET template, and I've customized it to produce my OCR service. So here we can see mysp.net, and here's the wonderful batch OCR demo service. So what we can see it's done here is we've got a number of files to process. So there's actually 130 PDFs in that container. And we're going to hit the process input files button in a second and get those processed. Just below it, we've got the job info. The information about the job will appear. And then we've got some pool admin here. So this is the first concept I want to introduce you guys to, is the concept of a pool. And the pool is what we call in Azure Batch is the group of VMs that are going to do your work. And when you have your batch account, you can create one or more pools, and those pools are those groups of VMs. So we'll have a look in a second at the code that's to create the pool. Actually, let's go and have a look at that now. So I'm not going to click on that at the moment. It takes, you know, 5-10 minutes for the VMs to appear. So I'm just going to show you the code, though, so you can start getting a flavor of the batch APIs and the capabilities and hopefully the simplicity of Azure Batch. So really, the sort of the main work appears here. Let me just get rid of that. We're going to create the pool. Can everyone see at the back there? Hopefully that's big enough. There we go. Make it bigger. So here we've got a simple API, C# API, to create the pool. You give it a name. You specify the OS family. This is just like worker roles. We give you a choice of OS families. And you specify that here. The VM size, here I'm just picking small. I just want to run single core. I've got low memory requirements. And I want 200 of them. I've got my max task set to 1 here. Cameron had his to 16 because he was running multiple on 1. I've just got small VMs, so I'm just going to set that to 1. And then sort of one of the key things here is the start task. So this is how those files, these applications, get on these VMs. So there's two main things. We can see that we've got a resource files. There's a list of files. And we create that list up here by going through that resource container I showed you, enumerating all the files there, and then adding them to this list of resources. And we specify those files. We reference them with a URL up to the blob storage and specify a local file name. And then we get those into a place on the VM literally by doing a copy file. So maybe with another application, this could be an MSI, for example, to install the application on the machine. Totally depends on the application, and you've got full flexibility here. And then the final thing, which is probably important most of the time, is you want to wait for the application to install before you start submitting tasks and the VM can become live and can be used. So hopefully that gives you a flavor for creating a pool, and we can have a look at a pool by using, actually it was the same tool that Cameron showed. Let me zoom in here. This is Batch Explorer, and actually we've released this. Effectively it's freely available and allows you to visually browse, monitor, and update your Azure Batch accounts. And we've actually released this as a sample, so you can go in and play with the code, reference the code, and see how we've done implemented some of these capabilities. So we can see we've got a pool. It's named TechEd OCR. There's 200 VMs, and they're of size small. The right-hand side here, we can see the VMs, list of VMs. And then let me just highlight here. This is a list of files on that top VM. And if I go down here, there we go. We can see we've got that tesseract.exe, for example, and then just a few up the PowerShell. So with that code I showed you, we've pulled in, when the pool's created, we've pulled in all those files from that container and installed them on the VM. And then as soon as they're there, then the pool and those VMs are ready to go. So then also what Cameron showed, we showed the heat map. So we can get a more graphical representation of that pool. And we can see here we've got 200 VMs of size small, one task per VM. And they're all white. They're all just ready to go. They're all idle. So let's actually submit. Let's do some OCR. So on this side, I'm going to run the process task button. And then let's just quickly go through, again, give you a flavor for the code to actually submit the work. So the first thing is we're going to create a job, and we specify the pool. We want to know where all the tasks are going to be executed. So you could have multiple pools with different applications on them. And then we're going to add a bunch of tasks here, and we're going to add as many tasks as there are files, PDFs, in that input container. So let's run that, and we'll get down to here on the add task. So if we actually have a look at the task, The task has the resource file because we want to pull in the particular PDF for that task. And when we create this task object, we give it a name and we give it the command line. So if we just, you can zoom in here, hopefully, so you can see it. So we're executing PowerShell as the command line, and we're running that PowerShell, and we've got a set of arguments, including an argument to reference that PDF. So in terms of the files as well, if I actually have a look at the blob here that we're pulling in, this is the PDF that we're pulling in from blob storage for this task, and we're just keeping the file name the same on the VM. So we've got 130 of these things. Let me continue here. And then we're going to commit those. So we've built up, here's defined the job, and now we're going to commit that. So we'll jump back to the UI here. We should see in a second or two, this job info will populate. The job's being created. And we should see here, I forgot to change this. Let's just go here. But anyway, we can see here, we've got the heat map light up as well. So it's not quite the 1,000 cores that Cameron had, but you can still see within a second or two here, we've started utilizing all those cores up in Azure, using Azure Batch. So we've submitted 130 of them. They tend to take anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes from what I've tried them out. So we'll monitor that as we go. And in the meantime, I can show you just one other feature here. So they're running away, but what we can see here, we've got a whole bunch of idle VMs, and I keep telling you, well, hey, look, this is great because we want you to increase your utilization and only pay for use. So let's do something about those idle VMs. And one of the key capabilities of Azure Batch is the ability either to easily manually resize these pools up or down, or we provide an auto-scale feature. So you can select, set a policy, maybe dependent on the queue depth, CPU usage, memory, whatever. Set that policy, we'll evaluate it every few seconds, and then change that target number of VMs for you so that you can scale according to load and therefore pay for use. So I'm going to actually resize this pool. Let's hit the resize. So we've got an API to resize the pool. And you see, it's pretty simple. We're resizing the pool. We're specifying the new pool size of 5. There's a time span for there's a timeout. And then there's a deallocation option. So I'll talk about that in a second. So let's continue. So we've submitted that. So over on this side here, you'll see now all these VMs that were idle and now gone yellow. And that basically means they're transitioning and the state is they're leaving the pool. So I went and said, I had all these VMs, 200 or so, and I'm saying, cut it down to 5. But then, you know, what happens to all those tasks that I'm running? So the sort of key capability to increase your utilization is to say, no, scale down, but don't interrupt the tasks that are running. Let them finish. So even though I've said, hey, take the target down to 5, it knows there's a 105 here currently running, and it's not going to remove those VMs until the tasks finish, and then it'll mark them as leaving the pool, and then within a few minutes, those VMs will be gone, and you the important thing for you guys is you're not paying for them anymore once they've left the pool. So hopefully this gives you a flavor for some of the capabilities that we've got here, some of the concepts in Azure Batch. So how many have we got? So we've done 105. Let's see what we've got processed. So if we go back to our storage account, go up to the root and output. And always gets me, you have to refresh here. So here we are, I think, I'm always lucky, this one always comes first here. So we had the PDF of this, this is the text, and we can see how good Tesseract is. So if I bring that up here, and bring that here, you can hopefully see, there we go, that in the time we've been talking in a few minutes, you know, we've run this computationally intensive OCR, and it's actually done, for this white paper, it's done a pretty good job of converting that to a text file. So hopefully you've sort of seen, I tried to give you a flavor of some of the main concepts, the pool, the jobs, the tasks, and we've sort of seen how, you know, a relatively small amount of code here, you can pretty easily run large-scale workloads using Azure Batch. So let's go back to the deck. There we go. Close this down. All right. So I thought it'd be useful to highlight some other use cases. We heard from Cameron on the Towers and RAFM, Risk Agility FM product. We've actually had a couple of other internal adopters inside Microsoft who I thought I'd highlight here as well. And the first one is Media Services. I don't know if any of you guys have used Media Services. It's been generally available now for quite a long time, and that's totally based. All those transcodes that Media Services does, it does the audio and video transcoding as a service, all those transcodes are executed on Azure Batch. So instead of that Media Services team having to develop all that infrastructure, they've used Azure Batch. So this is a perfect example of a service. You know, they've got their very media-centric API, UI, even business model, SLA, and so on. They've built their service, but have avoided building all that infrastructure. And they tend to have long-term pools that pretty much live for not even months on end. But they do have varying load. You know, the workload will vary. So they use actually the Resize API that I showed you earlier on, and according to some of their metrics, they hand back VMs when they're not using them and scale the VMs back up when they need them. So great use case, and it's been great working with those guys. And then I mentioned earlier on the software engineering side and the test service. So you'd be hopefully interested to hear that a whole bunch of the Azure components that hopefully you're using today or have heard of are all tested using Azure. And we've written our own, there's an internal test service that allows developers, testers, to submit those test suites. So they've built the service, they've got the experience, the upload, and so on of these packaged test suites. But at the end of the day, there's probably hundreds of thousands or millions of, actually on a weekly basis, millions of tests that need to be executed, and they're all executed on Azure Batch. And in this case, they actually use the autoscale feature and base that off the depth of the queue. So if the queue gets too much, all the VMs are busy and the queue's getting deeper and deeper, the work's piling up, then they use autoscale to scale up the number of VMs to cater for that higher load. So I think another great example of using Batch. I'm going to switch gears a little, and I think there's another main scenario that we want to target. So in the previous scenario, we talked about mainly a developer, and you're building a service, and you're providing all the front end and everything. You're building, developing, and running that service. But what if you've got an application? You know, a perfect example here is the Blender application. You've got an application, and you want to run it at cloud scale, but you don't want to go off and write a service. You really want a service provided for you. You're expert probably in that application, and you're fine effectively enabling that application, but you haven't really got or not interested in writing the service, monitoring it, maintaining it, and so on. You want that provided for you. So this is where we have another set of capabilities that effectively build on top of that VM management, job scheduling capabilities that I just showed you. And really sort of provide these some high-level capabilities as a service. So, you know, as a service, then you've got to worry about the application you want to run, and you want to be able to easily upload that application to a service, not necessarily worry about, oh, well, how do I use Azure storage, or how do I copy data to the VMs, the user management, the data movement, actually, from on-premises to the cloud. A whole bunch of capabilities that you would need. So we've actually provided a bunch of these, and really sort of the flow goes, you know, we have Azure Batch, there's Azure Storage there, and then the developer, we really want the developer to be able to focus on their application. That's where the expertise is. So maybe develop the plugin application. In the render demo, there's a rich plugin on the right-hand side of the Blender app. Be able to take the applications that you want to run at scale and any dependent files, package them up, and effectively upload them. And then, very simply, and without a large amount of knowledge, say, well, okay, how do I run this application? What are the parameters? What's the actual XE called? And then how do I want to split my job up? You know, how many tasks are there? And what we'll see is, you know, in a lot of cases, that's maybe dependent on the number of input files. Then as the end user, you get to leverage that plugin, if there was a plugin written. That plugin or a standalone application can synchronize the data and pass data up to Azure and the batch service, and then maybe monitor it within that plugin environment and stay within your workstation application. And then more on the ops or admin side, having that portal experience, the user and group management, application management, seeing what jobs people are creating, see how well utilized the pools are, and so on there. So let's actually have a look at enabling an application. It takes a while. Get rid of that. All right. So what I've actually got here in Visual Studio is a sample. And I wanted to sort of really show you this because it's really a sort of simpler sample and really highlight some of the concepts that I want to get across. So this actually sample is freely available. You can go up to Microsoft site and download it and try it. So the first thing here, actually, I'm going to start on the left. One of the things in those boxes was, well, how do I, as a developer, without knowing much about the cloud, without knowing much about Azure, how do I call my application? So in this case, we're actually going to use an open source, freely available application called ImageMagick. And we can see here, you have to write a little bit of code to basically say, hey, look, here's the executable, and I'm going to call it with some parameters, and I'm going to basically get it to resize some images to a certain width and across here to a certain height. So the first main concept is, okay, how do I call my task? How do I call the application? And write a small amount of code to specify that. The next step is then, okay, what does my job consist of? What are the tasks? So in this case, we've got a folder with a bunch of images that probably look familiar because they're the images that basically come with Windows. We've got those in a folder. So in this case, I literally want to create a task per image. So we can see here we've got a small amount of code. There's a job splitter we've inherited from, and we've got our ImageMagick job splitter. And literally just a few lines of code that create this list of tasks, and it creates the list of tasks, literally one per file in the folder. So again, very, very simple. So I showed in the diagram before that then, okay, so this is key code. We need to upload this for the service to be able to execute. So I can come over here to the Solution Explorer. I can rebuild that. And that's going to produce a couple of assemblies. And let me, if I go to that folder where they should be built, we can dig into the bin, debug, and we can see, so the time should be, there we go, 12:53. So we've just built that. So what we have to do here is we take basically the DLLs, even including the PDB, and package this up. And all we need you to do is put it into a zip file. And we've got a zip file there. So that logic is now zipped up. The other thing I want to show you here is we have an ImageMagick.zip. So this is, again, we've basically taken this convert.exe, which is the ImageMagick application, again, zip that up. So we've got these two packages there ready to go. So what do we do with them? So let's go into the Azure portal. Now, I hadn't actually shown you this earlier. So this is obviously the Azure portal, hopefully you all know and love. And we can see here, I'm really happy to see this appear this week. We've got the batch services. We can create a new batch service. It's under compute, batch service, quick create. There's the experience there. We can pick any region. The service is available in any region. And obviously, I've got a number of services already created here, and I'm going to use this one for the demo. So hopefully fairly standard, fairly familiar experience in the Azure portal for you. And then in order to get this higher level service experience, we try this nice, easy little button here to go and manage your batch applications. So let's click on that. So we're taken to another portal. So this is a preview. What we're looking at is actually integrating this, or at least some of this, in whatever makes sense, back into the Azure portal. So you don't have that consistent look and feel. But so we currently, we push you out into this slightly different experience here, Batch Apps experience. We can see I've got the service created. We can see even where in the world it's created. And then a key thing here is this Manage Applications. So I've created the service, and we click on Manage Applications. And if I resize it, we can see we've got a couple of applications. So I've been using the ImageMagick demo one. So let's select that and edit the application. So this is basically where I've already uploaded these maybe previously. I've made some modifications to my job splitter or my task processor. And now I want to upload that. So instead of, you know, previously you'd had to upload them to storage and reference them in the resource files, here we're providing the UI and the portal experience to do this. So I can take that cloud, that zip file that I just produced. Actually, we're here, how convenient. And we've got this file that we just produced, the zip file. So we just open that and update that. So that's effectively uploading that logic to the service. Should be pretty quick. So there we go. If we've got maybe a new version of the application, a new version of ImageMagick, we can upload that here, and you can see there's a way to version these as well. So I could go from local, and I think it was up at this level, and select that. This is a big file, so I'm just gonna leave that, but I can say done. So effectively now what we've done is, at least I've showed you the experience, so we've taken whatever the application, we've taken these assemblies that define how to call the task, how to create the job and all the job tasks, and uploaded them to the service. Now let's actually use that service. So if I jump back to the sample here, we can see we've got a client. So this is a very simple, we want to sort of keep it simple to show the concepts, command line client that's going to take some arguments, the input folder and the output folder, and then run ImageMagick on the images that are found in the input folder. So let's run that. It's a nice command line UI, but I've got some breakpoints in here. So there's some initial work needs to be done in terms of the authentication. That's done up here. But once we've got that, we can then, we've got this, there we go, ImageMagick program core. So that the key logic is actually just actually here in these two lines. So the first thing we want to know about is the files in that input folder. So that's going to load that list of files from the source directory. We can see that directory here. And then I have got a breakpoint. So let's continue on. Then when we're submitting the job, the first thing it does is to create this job spec. So we can see the job spec code here. So we're going to say, hey, look, I want to resize this to 500 by 500. And here's some parameters. Here's the files. It's that list that you told me about, and there's 8 files. I've got some parameters and the instance count. I don't know whether that's, it's going to show up here. So if I go up here in the job spec, those with good eyesight could see we've got basically all the job spec there. So let's submit that. So we can see here, what's this actually going to do is it's going to submit a job. It's going to move all the files in that input folder up to Azure Batch. And then it's going to kick off, run the job, and spread out the tasks. There'll be 8 tasks because there's eight files. And then download those resized images. But you see the amount of code that I had that was there to actually achieve that. And what you didn't see, hopefully, was any, you know, there's no code for Azure storage. There's no real data movement code. We sort of really minimize the concepts and the amount of code that you have to write so that, you know, if you know the application that you're going to cloud enable, it's, you know, really straightforward for you to fill in the job splitter, the task processor, and so on, upload that, and then make that available, make that application available at scale to your users. So what you can see here, this is running, the job's created, and it's saying, hey, I'm waiting for the compute resource. So where the default for this is that this is configured so that basically we're going to create a pool for every job. That's the way we've configured it initially. So a pool's getting created, but that could take 5 to 10 minutes. So while we're waiting on that, we might be able to see that later. If I go back to the portal here, I should be able to click onto jobs and see the jobs. So we can see here I've got my job. It's not started because we're waiting for the VMs. I can pull up the logs, though, and that should confirm. Yep, I'm waiting for the VMs, but the job's queued for processing, and I've received that request. So we've got this sort of rich logging available in the UI. And I can pull in the details as well, and we're going to see, okay, well, we can see, hey, look, it's going to take 8 to 8 instances, but we've got no task created yet. So if I actually jump back, I can do the old trick and show you one I did earlier, showed this morning at just before 10 o'clock. So if I select that, job details, we can see here I got the tasks. There's a merge task, and in this case, it's not doing anything. In the case of the Blender demo, for example, it stitched together all the tiles. In this case, there's a task run, but it's really sort of a no-op, so that's why there's 9. So we can see the rest of the tasks here. They all only took a few seconds because it's pretty easy. It's not particularly computationally intensive. And then if we can select a task, we can have a look at the output. The output should be a bitmap. And we can even see, okay, well, let's actually click on this and open up the bitmap. It's going to download it. And if we pull up the properties for that, you know, we can see here it's changed it to 500. It keeps the scale, so one of the dimensions is 500. So it's done that. One last thing I will show is if we go back to our, let's see here, we've reduced that previous pool, it's down to 5 and they're sitting there idle. I'm not paying for those any longer. Let's actually connect to this different account just to show you. So this is our batch app demo. So it's all built on, I say this is layered on, these high-level capabilities are layered on that foundational layer that I showed you in the first demo. So we can see here we've got the pool. There was the 9 VMs, and these will be coming up. I can show you the heat map. And there's 9, and they're creating. So they're coming up. So they would be available in a few minutes. So hopefully there you've sort of seen introduce our concept of batch applications. It's sort of much high-level capability where you can focus on just cloud-enabling the applications and not producing that service. So let's go back here. So just to wrap up, so there's a use case, and I don't know if there's Spanish folks in the audience. I believe Pepito is pretty well known in Spain. I didn't know that until a few days ago. But we worked with Proan Entertainment, and that's a great example of someone using Blender, that Blender application, to render a full 90-minute animation. And if they were going to do this with their on-premises hardware, it would have been 13 years to render this. So they partnered with us, and the whole animation was actually rendered in Azure in 3 months. So again, sort of the power of with these animations or films, they tend to be very, very bursty. Hey, there's nothing happening for a while, prepare everything, and then you need to render it, and you suddenly need a whole bunch of compute, and you don't really want to buy that compute and run it for a few months of the year. Again, fantastic use of hyperscale with the cloud. Just a few minutes left. I wanted to sort of cover. There are services that I think really are pretty well related and really would compose well with Azure Batch. And just the thing I want to really stress is hopefully you've seen Azure Batch provides this service that gives you this large scale application execution. This really, the big compute, computationally intensive work. We've seen 1,008 cores used with Cameron there. And we can go up, you can request pools of 10,000, 20,000 VMs or higher. No problem there. So So we're providing this large-scale execution over large numbers of VMs, all basically by specifying then a command line to run those applications. No special SDK or runtime required. So scheduler, sometimes people ask me, well, what's scheduler? Doesn't that do that sort of thing? And it doesn't. It's a fantastic service that really invokes work that gets done on other services. So really rich, really nice interface and capabilities around, hey, run this on the last Friday of the month or 2 a.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But it's all about invoking other services. So we're going to work with the scheduler team, and we're going to enable the scheduler then. Could be a great way to compose these services together and have the scheduler be able to kick off your jobs in Azure Batch. I think it's sort of be perfect working together. There's then web jobs. Web jobs maybe confuses things slightly because it actually does perform some work within the context of the website and those website VMs. But again, it's at a small scale within the context of a website. So I hope in the next couple of months, I was chatting to the team, and we'll come up with a sample of how you can use web jobs, create or websites, maybe have the web jobs and have those invoke this large-scale work using Azure Batch. Again, great story, I think, for composing these things. There's mobile services as well, very, very similar, small-scale execution within the context of the mobile services environment. I think HD Insight is really super interesting, very high-scale managed service, does a lot of compute, but really, really focused on that Hadoop ecosystem and data, very, the big data. So actually what we've seen here is, again, this sort of a great match here. We've had worked with a couple of customers that they've used batch, they've used big compute to perform all this computationally intensive work. And in their cases, it's producing a whole bunch of data that they want to keep and process later. So what they do is they take that all that data and put it in HD Insight. And then they can process that, query that, and leverage all the rich capabilities of that ecosystem to really use that data and process that data. So I think, again, a great combination. And there's automation. You can run your PowerShell, run books. And again, so Azure Batch, we've got account management, I think, today in the PowerShell. And we'll be literally on every 3 or 4 week basis rolling out enhanced PowerShell. So you pretty much everything you can do in the Batch Explorer and more, you'll be able to do in PowerShell. And everything you'll be able to do in the API, you'll be able to do in PowerShell. And then, really, if you want to, you could go worker roles and develop all those blue boxes and get work executed but in the at scale in Azure. I mean, obviously, it's the lowest level. You get the full control, but obviously, it is a bunch of work. So hopefully, we've seen here that we've provided a great set of capabilities to support big compute and HPC. You really want to make it more broadly accessible, maybe to those smaller companies, make it much easier for the developer, make things more cost effective for you or your customers. We've got this enterprise ready infrastructure with this huge scale, all the VMs, the range of VMs and so on, all the way from commodity to high performance. The choice, a lot of choice with IaaS, Windows or Linux. The allowing you to migrate from on-premises to the cloud with HPC pack and then batch as cloud only. And then I'll get a plug-in for Azure Batch. It's released this week. If you're really interested, providing you this job scheduling capability as a service, everything I've shown here is real and live and isn't available. So if you're interested, do sign up and start putting it to some good use and burning some cores out there like Cameron's been doing for the last couple of months. So with that, I will be at the Ask the Experts booth, and I think there's an event tonight, Ask the Experts tonight, and I'll be at the Azure booth this afternoon and tomorrow. If anyone's got any questions, would like to find out more, deeper into the code, that sort of thing. And then finally, put all these slides on the end. Please complete an eval form. Tell me if you enjoyed the session, give me any feedback, I'd love your feedback. So with that, thank you very much, and I'll take some questions.